Good evening, everyone. Can the folks out there in Zoom land hear me? Good. Okay, and can the folks in here hear me? Good. So this is not a really well-prepared Dharma talk. It's some things that I've just pulled together because I've been thinking a lot about fire and drought, worrying. I'm thinking particularly about the folks in the interior who are really suffering from the smoke and from many cases loss of their homes or displacement. So that's been really in my heart and mind a lot. I'm thinking about the elements, the elements are really acting up in our earth right now. We have fires and drought here, and Europe has floods, and Japan and India and maybe somewhere else, I think, have had earth landslides. So we've got three elements there: earth, water, and fire. I haven't heard about any tornadoes or bad hurricanes, but they'll come. So those elements that make up our very bodies, those elements without which we couldn't live in extremes, can be so harmful, and yet we are all totally dependent on all of them. But particularly fire, so I brought some readings about fire. The first one is, of course, from the early Buddhist texts of the Pali Canon, and what was called the fire sermon that the Buddha taught. And it goes like this, at least in this translation: the all is a flame. Which all is a flame? The eye is a flame. Forms are a flame. Visual consciousness is a flame. Visual contact is a flame. And whatever there is that arises in dependence on visual contact, experienced as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, that too is a flame. A flame with what? A flame with the fire of passion or desire. A flame, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion, the three poisons, right? Greed, hatred, and delusion. A flame, I tell you, with birth, aging, and death, with sorrows, lamentations, pains, distresses, and despairs. The ear is a flame, sounds are a flame, the nose is a flame, aromas are a flame, the tongue is a flame, flavors are a flame, the body is a flame, tactile sensations are a flame, the intellect is a flame, ideas are a flame, mental consciousness is a flame, mental contact is a flame. And whatever that arises in dependence on mental contact, experienced as pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, that too is a flame. A flame with what? A flame with the fire of passion, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion. A flame, I tell you, with birth and aging and death, with sorrows, lamentations, pains, distresses, and despairs. So that's pretty strong stuff. Everything is burning. And of course, that's comes out of the fundamental teaching of the Four Noble Truths. First truth is there is suffering in our lives, or dukkha. And the second truth is also pervasive dissatisfaction. If suffering is too strong a word, it includes the whole range from the most acute anguish and suffering to the most niggling annoyances is all dukkha. And the second truth, of course, there's a cause for our dukkha, our suffering, and that being desire to have or get rid of, both ways, right? I want that, I don't want that. And so we suffer. In, you know, the greatest and the smallest of ways. And then the third truth is that there is cessation, or an end to suffering. And the fourth, the path, the Eightfold Path, a set of practices. Because the Buddha was, if anything, a pragmatist, a set of practices that release us from suffering. And it's often presented or discussed in classical Buddhism as complete cessation, complete snuffing out of those fires, you know. But ultimately, that doesn't happen. Even in the Buddha, the final nirvana, was death, and the final cessation, full cessation. So, you know, the truth of the matter is we still have to live with our sparky stuff, our flames, as long as we are living human bodies on this earth. Not only that, I would venture to say that if we are to walk the path of the Bodhisattva, we have to know what those flames feel like, so our hearts can open to those who are suffering. We have to be well acquainted with our own flames and to recognize that the life force within us is natural. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It is natural for us to seek what nourishes and keeps us alive and to avoid what's going to harm us. But, you know, we all know that our habit patterns go into overdrive way beyond what is needed, right? So there's an interesting alternate etymology for the third noble truth of cessation, Nirodha, which is more like banking up the embers. The embers have died down. They're quiet, but they're there, you know. The embers of, you know, our lives. But they're banked up. They're taken care of. They're restrained from doing harm, you know. So just take the current wildfire situation, and it's pretty, you know. How does fire work? So here's my second reading that I want to offer to you, and it's not from any Buddhist text. It's from an Australian Aboriginal elder about how to live with fire. This man's name is Rod Mason, and he's is his English name, and his Aboriginal name is Ibai Wumbura. And he's called a senior lawman. That's how it's translated. And he's a community leader and a tradition holder, and a custodian of the country. They call it the country, meaning the land. And it's knowledge, ceremonies, practices. And this is kind of a transcription of his oral offerings, teachings, by a man named Charles Massey, who was a rancher. Imagine a 2,000-acre ranch. They have big ranches in Australia. And he was a very conventional rancher. And he had a kind of conversion experience, a kind of realization of how his way of ranching was turning the land into a desert and the harm that had been done over years. And the conversion experience came through his own direct observations, but also very much from his contact with this Aboriginal elder, Rod Mason, with whom he became real friends. So this is the section. There's so much in here that I would love to read you. They have stories. They're probably the longest continuously inhabiting Aboriginal people kind of outside Africa. Incredibly long tradition and oral stories that go back to the Ice Age, to the megafauna, big marsupial wombats the size of a rhinoceros in their stories, and stories of having come from the Indonesian archipelago. Like, their stories go back, their origin stories go back to how they got there, which is pretty amazing. But the part I want to read you is about fire. Give me a minute. I grew up mainly in desert country. That's where I learned how to burn country, the desert, and then down here, the coast and forest country. I learned how to burn from both my grandfathers and the other older men and from my grandmothers. Oh, prior to that, I should just say he describes to the rancher. He says, we were always managing. We created patterns and mosaics, lovely meadows where we hunted kangaroo and wallaby and dug for yam daisies. It all needed managing. So you describe how they lived on the land in relationship to the land, and particularly with fire. So he says there are little secrets when you're taken out on country and taught by elders, you know, how to watch a fire burn through an area, watch a wind swing around at a certain time of the day and backburn on itself. It will clean itself up and you don't need anything. So it's just patience and living with that thing, you know. Otherwise, do the wrong thing, and someone from our family or friends will be taken. I started learning when I was a little toddler, two or three, something like that. They wrap you up, put you in the bushes, you smell the smoke, you know something's going on there, might get your leg burned or your forehead burned. That's all right, that's how it was. So using fire, we make country. We still make country now. We go into a small swamp, burn about half a mile of it there, go back the next year there, all is brand new. You got things popping up you didn't ever see. The first time done, it's magic. Like at Lake Mungo before we went back to burn. Nothing there, just sand. But then we burned it, and now you see all the wildflowers. We got wildflower gardens growing under local gum trees they didn't even know existed there. And casuarina trees, which used to grow along the edge of the waterways. So everything was in its natural patterns. We just need fire at the right time, charcoal to spark up, some rain to come. I began learning too when 10, 11, 12, in the long grass country, I started burning near the camps, created nice soft ground there, charcoal in the ground there, you know, to keep it cool on a hot day. You can feel it walking into it, nice and cool on a hot day under trees, like a big fridge. It was that charcoal and moisture in the ground. And when a fire went through there, it was protected by the charcoal. You can't burn through charcoal, you know that, eh? You try and burn charcoal, then you're there forever. So that's the little blanket we put down in our campgrounds, keep us cool on a hot day, warm on cool days. We had our own air conditioners, our own fans. It's just that all these things have eroded away through poor management, through exclusion. We weren't allowed back to those areas. We understand air currents, pressures, breezes. My nanny used to pick up a little feather just like that and on its own it would just fly up. We sit there lying down and watch it. How'd she know that? She'd know exactly where to put that feather. Just let her go and it would spin around on its own. Go up and down, up and down. See, we was taught things there. Patience, observation, and understanding. That's all it is. You know, the original burning patterns are still in the ground. We need to burn open ground again. We need charcoal. She's a filter, helps water quality. And we know the different charcoals, from gums to tea tree shrubs, which give a finer ash. We know how to burn to nourish and create our fruit garden, fruit orchards for pigeons, our herb gardens, yam gardens, our fern gardens, our wildflower havens for butterflies, wattle thickets for possums, and tucker for gliders. Gliders are like flying squirrels, only they're marsupials. Tucker is food. Part of the problem, too, is we lost all the little fellas in the grasslands and forests. The bandicoots, the woylies, the betongs, the bilbies, potoroos, and the desert hopping mouse. Their favorite tucker was mushrooms, fungus. They spread them around, and fungus kept the country moist. Those little fellas, it was their favorite tucker, but we've lost them nearly all. The sheep, cattle destroyed the country, and the plow drained it, turned it into desert some places. And the foxes and cats destroyed them. Still do, especially after these fires. That fungus nearly all gone now. So the country dried, and dry country, well, she burns more and hotter. Lot of damage. Yeah, that's a big part of it. You see, it's just like a wet piece of carpet drying out, taking the fungus away. Becomes that dry part that eventually dies. And one day you walk over it and put a tear in it. That's what's happening, like old newspaper. That's why these fires were so bad. Most of it, the drying, is unintentional because of lifestyles, you know, and lack of listening, learning, and understanding. Needs patience, eh? So that's what happens when you're impatient. And that's why we say, listen to us and learn from us, you know. It all starts there, our personal life experience. But time's running out now. If we don't come up with something we can do together, instead of one leaving the other behind, then it's never going to work. This place will turn into more desert, and this summer was a sign of what will happen. Drought, then big fires. And then he talks about, of course, you remember, it was just over 2019, early 2020, that the horrible, horrible fires in Australia. And he talks about, I don't even think I can read this part aloud. He was taking care of a colony of koalas. He kind of gathered them up. He had a rescue colony of koalas, and they were all killed in the fire. So I just sat down and I cried. So this summer, this year, she's a big warning, see. In our culture, our stories, we talk about the big fire tornadoes, the warawadis. And I was just, was it the Globe and Mail? Don't quote me, because I didn't check my source before coming in this evening. It was a Canadian source about a kind of cloud called a ferrocumulus or a ferrocumulonimbus, which is a cloud that's created by a big fire. And then the winds sucked up, and it looks like a big thunderhead, and the winds created by this cloud stir up the fire even worse, and so it's like a fire tornado, and that's exactly what he's describing. And there was a picture of one on this online news source around maybe Ashcroft, that area of BC, this big cloud. So I was really moved by the care and the sophistication of this knowledge of of fire and wind, air currents, and land that this man expressed. And thought, how can we give that degree of care, attention, articulated attention to our weather, not our inner weather, right? That's our practice, to pay attention to our inner weather, and then our relationship to the world around us and the land. And, you know, here are these people who were so denigrated as primitive by the settlers, the colonists, who had this ancient, sophisticated knowledge. And it just feels like we still have so much to learn in our culture. So, what's your weather report? What's burning right now? You know, is it desire? Or is it aversion? Or is it, I just don't want to deal with this? You know, the delusion is our, here's one way I describe the third poison delusion, is our stubborn refusal to see the truth of impermanence and no separate self. And that, of course, leads to some suffering. So I just wanted to share that reading and thoughts, my thoughts about fire coming out of this reading, and invite you, because we have time still, to talk to each other. Give a weather report. What's the weather in your heart and mind today? What have you noticed? What have you observed? Because we need to fine-tune it, you know. It's not about stomping out those embers for good. We have to tend them with care and awareness. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. I'm going to stop talking. I guess that's a good sign. That's a good sign. Okay. So, you folks out there in Zoom land, you just go ahead and, whoops, somebody else just disappeared. Those of you still there, I'm going to mute. And I'm going to turn my sound off. And I think then you'll be able to do that, okay? And each just take a turn, maybe 3 minutes or so. And then you can open up and have some further discussion. Just, you know, give a weather report. And then any response you have to the reading. Okay? Here goes. I'm going to stop the video so that they don't see us. Now, because there are more of us, maybe we should divide 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So Doug, if you slide over and you make a little group of five, and you guys, and over here, or should we, maybe five, that's 10. Or maybe we should do three groups of three. Yeah, given the time. There they are talking away in their little boxes.
groups of three.
Okay.
I could join a group.
1, 2, 3. Harkmel River, Eden. 3. Will, Rachel.
Brendan.
Okay, can you join them? And then Pedro and Louise and Doug and Jen. Yeah, make a four. Something like that. So each just take, you know, about 3 minutes. self time, and then take.
It may be good to have a bell. No one has watches. Self time.
Okay. Can someone pass me the inking? And I will try and time you, just to keep it moving. Okay, please tell each other your names. See what?
I'm Jenny.
I'm Pedro.
The translation.
Oh, yeah, this is Tanisaro.
Yeah, I want to see.
You want to see it? Take a peek? Okay.
He has awesome translation.
Okay. I will ring a bell, and then someone start, and then I will time just so we keep it moving. About every 3 minutes, I'll ring a bell, and then the next person can go. Okay, ready? Someone start. Be brave. Someone start. No, but open the door. No. We'll have to get back on Zoom. Just open the door.
So, prison lights.
And so, storms.